Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Nuggets News, or our monthly housing and economy update with our friend Martin North. How are you, Martin? How was your Christmas and New Year's and all that over in the UK?
It was fantastic catching up with friends and family that I've not seen for a long, long time. And we have a little cold weather now, a bit of snow and what have you. But no, it was actually nice to be, amongst my old friends. And hope you had a good Christmas New Year too.
It was fantastic trying to smash out a lot of hikes and see all the waterfalls and things that cricket hasn't allowed me to do in previous summers. So it's been really good down here in Tassie, the weather. So it's been great.
Excellent, excellent.
Fantastic. Well, let's dive in some of these slides or anything, I guess, overview. We did have a month off over Christmas. Is there anything you wanted to just touch on before we dive into the
Well,
presentation?
I think I want to highlight the general level of uncertainty in terms of the information flows and in terms of what the markets are thinking. So anybody who thinks that 2024 is going to be up in the highlands, and everything's going to be fine, no storms around, I think are probably kidding themselves. And so as we talk about what's happened, I'm also going to seed a little bit of thinking about what 2024 might look like too.
Yeah, and in terms of those information sources, as you say, it's the tipsy-topsy world in the mainstream media as well, with some of the alternate media channels are growing like well and truly into the millions now. And we see whatever, Fox News getting rid of Tucker and the viewership on the TV channels or whatever you want to call that legacy media getting lower and lower. Now, you and I are pretty small fish in the pond, but there's a lot of independents as well. So the fact is that there's more eyeballs on this, I guess, alternate news these days, whereas people are saying, the mainstream and the government are still pushing, you can only trust the real source of media. So very interesting times.
Well, that's right. And of course, there's legislation, or was legislation in Australia trying to, if you like, restrict commentary from other than government-approved sources. I mean, it didn't go anywhere, but even the idea of they should try to do that suggests to me that some of those people close to power or in power are really worried about what's really going on and want to suppress some of the truth.
Well, people need to be aware of that because they often try to introduce these things and they don't get through and then it'll come back and it's just that gradual chipping away. But as we spoke about in the pre-interview, it's kind of funny with the SEC Twitter getting hacked today and saying, hey, all the Bitcoin ETFs are approved. Just a few months ago, they tweeted out, only trust the SEC for your source of news as
Exactly.
well.
It's
So.
quite hilarious. I mean, that's really just showing you that you can't necessarily trust anything you see in social media. But if you do correlate multiple sources and you can begin to develop a bit of a storyline, which frankly is quite different from that which Jim Chalmers and the other political leaders around the place would want to propagate. I sometimes say he's living in an Alice in Wonderland world where everything is fine and not a few minor issues. The truth is that, of course, things are much, much more complex, and we'll touch on a bit of that as we go through.
Yes, we want to live in a world where we can question things and have debate and have alternative views. So
Spot
let's
on.
dive into these slides. Okay, so we're back sitting around all-time highs on the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ US stocks.
Yeah, and the point about this, Alex, is of course we had markets, going down, going down, going down last year until we got to sort of September, October, and then suddenly there was a whoosh up, and that whoosh up was driven strongly by people now believing that the Fed was going to start cutting rates, and so the markets got overexcited again. Early in the new year, we saw then markets come back, and the markets were a bit lower again overnight. So, but we actually, if you look at it over the last 2 years, we've gone nowhere. So up, down, up, down, up, down, and this volatility. Now, the volatility, of course, benefits traders in the marketplace, the big financial firms, et cetera, et cetera. Volatility doesn't necessarily really give good results for other people, and so some of the superannuation funds will be reporting less good results than you might expect. So, but this is a really important point. We're at all-time highs, valuations are extended, and really, it's a lot of hopium.
Yeah, and I think that other scenario we've touched on where it can be an upside down world where there's just been so much money printed, and even if we head into a recession and more people than ever are feeling the pinch, maybe stocks and houses can go up for all the wrong reasons because it's so different to any other time in history. So I guess that's the thing that I'm saying to people, be prepared for something like that to be another possibility.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of liquidity still sloshing around, and as we've seen a moment or two, while the Fed's balance sheet might be going back a little bit, US government treasury issuance is through the roof.
All right. So bond yields have ticked up again after they peaked around 5% back in October.
So this was another rocky road last year when the bond yields went very, very high. But again, because of what the Federal Reserve said later last year, then they dropped dramatically. So again, huge volatility. But this year, they're rising again. And in fact, overnight, they went a little higher again as well. So the story of higher yields, in other words, higher interest rates, is certainly not dead.
So as you mentioned just then, the market and the Fed are a little bit of a disconnect in terms of their dot plots and maybe some rate cuts coming sooner than expected.
Yeah, so the markets are thinking 6 rate cuts this year, the first in probably March, a 59% probability. The Fed's dot plots suggested maybe 3 over the year, but later. And in fact, after Jerome Powell was very, I think, hawkish in terms of taking rates down, other Federal Reserve members subsequent were much more saying, no, we've got to be very careful, and we're hawkish on the upside, saying, rates may have to go, at the same rate for quite a long time. So don't expect too much too soon. So the markets now begin to moderate their thinking, because at one stage, the probability of a March rate cut was, almost baked in.
Yeah, it was a bit of that after reaction, wasn't it, when they spoke about cutting, and they probably weren't happy with the market's reactions to taking off and that forward-looking nature that they sometimes have, and they've got to wheel out another governor or chairperson the next day and say, oh, that's not what we meant, and do a bit of jawboning to try and get markets and bond rates and that back to more closely where they want them in their models.
Yeah, it's certainly quite amusing. But of course, the other point is, as markets have gone up, that is effectively more stimulus into the economy. So if you're worried about inflation still being an issue, then strong markets are actually not necessarily good, because it gives you more upside on inflation. So in a way that the Fed wants to sort of put it back in the bottle a bit as well. So a lot of jawboning, as you say, and a lot of head fakes around, I think, at the moment.
Yep. All right. Next up, we've got the US data.
Yeah, this is interesting. The truth is that the data coming out of the US at the moment is conflicting. So there are some things like US manufacturing that's looking pretty sick. Other information like the jobs numbers was pretty strong. Unemployment not really much a concern at the moment. So the mixed messages that we continue to see are actually remarkable. And so it begs the question, what's the greatest risk? Is the greatest risk a recession in the US, or is the greatest risk more inflation? And actually, I don't think anybody knows at the moment, because the data is pointing two directions.
Yeah, either way, more wealth inequality is coming, I think, is the answer, man.
I'm afraid that's baked in, absolutely. So if you look at the top few percent, they continue to do extremely well. If you're looking at the bottom 50, 60%, then much less well, real income's dropping. Same in Australia. We've got this, bifurcation of what's going on at the moment, which is not good for society nor the broader economy.
All right. So the Fed's balance sheet, they were hoping to maybe unwind it a little bit more. And now we've also got debt going parabolic.
Well, this is the point. So, the Fed did a massive stimulus, a quantitative easing, most recently around COVID, but, over the last few years. And they have started to wind back. It's about 13% down from its peak. But at the same time, the US Treasury is doing a massive amount of debt issuance. So they've got a massively large balance sheet. So we've still got this massive amount of liquidity in the system. And so anybody who thinks that central governments around the world are going to dial back debt are probably kidding themselves, right? The truth is that there is no way out of this debt hole other than to print more debt.
Yeah, I've just put up the US debt clock for everyone. If you're not familiar with this website, definitely go check it out, usdebtclock.org. But past $34 trillion. And the total interest paid on that debt is the other thing to watch that's spiraling out of control now. At a time while the trueflation, as we spoke about in previous episodes, is back down around that 2% to 3% band where they want it, but a lot of these other, places for money to flow are still a big worry, a big headache for the Fed and the Treasury, that type of thing.
And you made a really important point, Alex, that it's the debt servicing costs, right? When interest rates were ultra, ultra low, then the debt servicing costs were manageable. But now with higher rates, and as we showed you, the you know, the debt levels mean, of course, more bonds, and bond rates are high. That means you're having to pay more. And in fact, on some models, the amount of debt that's going to be serviced is going to blot up a greater and greater proportion of the total public finances, both in Australia and in the US. Now, the only way out of this is to bring more inflation in to deflate, if you like, the total debt. So you could argue that, in fact, higher inflation would be good for central bankers and good for those governments, but of course not good for ordinary people. So you've got this massive issue at the moment with this ballooning debt problem. And wherever you look around the world, of course, there's more debt. People are drowning in it. But there's no way out of it. And unfortunately, we're going to have less and less money available from public finances to be able to fund, you know, education and health and those things that actually they should be doing. And whilst they'll chuck a whole lot of money at defence, which, maybe not a good thing, but ordinary services for ordinary people are just getting cut left, right and centre as a result of all this.
Yeah, I don't want to go too far off topic, but I watched a couple of good documentaries the other day about the US health budget, Medicare, Medicaid, and government spending in the trillions now. And then these products come along like Ozempic. I'm not sure how familiar you are with everything that's going on there, Martin, and you know, just how the health insurers are ripping off the companies, are ripping off the government and the real costs and all that type of thing. And it's just all part of this corporate military industrial complex that's addicted to growing their profits and that quarter after quarter, whereas the conversations that need to be have about, hey, let's get everyone on a really healthy diet and lifestyle and all that type of thing, you can't change this sort of two-party system. You need really radical changes because the powers that be have too much money in the lobbying that happens. But I think at some point people are going to have to start to say, hold on, why are we paying trillions and trillions of dollars for all this healthcare? Why is everyone sick? Why are they telling us that this unhealthy food is now healthy? And, you know, it's just this upside down world that continues to make me wonder what people are really thinking.
Well, I agree. Another example in the UK is the post office. There was a big system put in called the Horizon system some years ago. And the Horizon system was an accounting system for all the post offices. And now it's proved that effectively that was defective, and hundreds of people who own those post offices were actually accused of, defrauding the post office. And basically the political class and the post office went after them. And actually this last week there was a big series on television here which really highlighted it. And now everyone's saying, hang on a moment, there's something wrong here. But people have known this for years. And again, it's the power of politics and big business over and against ordinary people. And I think this is yet another example where things have gone terribly, terribly wrong.
Along with the power of alternate media to shine a light on these issues, and people seem to be interested in them. So let's hope that continues to happen.
Hear, hear.
okay, so China syndrome.
Look at the market in China. It's way, way down. And of course, some people are saying now China is uninvestable. So from market's point of view, we've had Fitch downgrading some of the state entities. We've had the Chinese government throwing more money at the system and reducing interest rates. We've had a couple of banks going bust. The Chinese economy is looking pretty worrisome. And if you think about it, the US economy is a bit wobbly. The Chinese economy is very wobbly. They're the two biggest in play. So what does that say about the state of play more broadly? And we're going to see, I think, some more significant developments through 2024. And the fallout for Australia could be quite significant because, of course, China is one of our major exporting homes. And even the iron ore price is back now, down a bit. So watch this space. I think it's going to be a very interesting 2024 for China.
Okay, so Australian retail negative in real terms.
Yeah, so this was interesting. This came out yesterday, of course, and the top line number was a little bit positive. But when you look at it, it was up 2.2% year over year. But when you look at it, it was boosted by Black Friday and a few other things. But as AMP said, look, if you look at it in terms of what's really happening, consumers are looking for more discounts. In real terms, they're still negative. And if you adjust it for per capita because of high migration, they are way, way, way down. So there's no good news here for retail. And this is not surprising because consumers are actually up against it, you know, high cost of living, et cetera, et cetera. So those who actually were thinking that this retail result might encourage Reserve Bank to perhaps adjust interest rates might need to think again, because in real terms, no good news at all.
Okay, next up, consumer confidence in the gutter still. Anything to add there, Mark?
Well, just to say that, of course, it was up. It seems to always be up just after Christmas, maybe because people were thinking about Christmas when they gave the results. But look, it's still way, way down, and there is really no light in the tunnel here. You know, households are really up against it, and consistent now with consumer surveys in some other countries too, we have a big issue. Again, it's this disconnect between, you know, the proportion of people who are feeling everything's fine, but the greater proportion now who say, hang on a moment, this is a real uphill struggle. And I think 2024 will be another uphill struggle for many.
Yeah, and again, those savings buffers, it's hard to get the real granular data on, continue to be drawn down, and it's hard to say because of the averages and the wealthy and whatnot, but do you have any thoughts to share on that, how much the savings buffers have sort of been dwindling and people save a bit to spend at Christmas and then worry about next year now?
Yeah, that's right. And of course, there was an expectation early on that, well, maybe the RBA would cut rates. But as this next slide shows, you know, borrowers' hopes for relief fade as markets push out RBA rate cuts until September. And that's probably still quite optimistic. So the inflation data that came out, the monthly inflation data, was down slightly, but there were so many swings and roundabouts there with petrol positive, but some other things like rents negative. And of course, we've got quite a lot of the inflation now being crimped because of government support. So look at the electricity support and you know, some other things like rent support for some people. So the inflation story is not dead yet. Services inflation is still bubbling along. And in real terms, people are continuing to go backwards, unfortunately. And also, you know, everyone's now saying, well, they won't be able to cut as aggressively as we perhaps were thinking back in next September, October, November. So don't expect any rate cuts anytime soon in Australia.
Yeah, and even if the Fed and some of these other places are able to cut maybe one or two to test the waters, it's harder for Australia because we didn't get to the same peak in terms of interest rates.
Yeah, exactly right. And on the next slide, this is again from the Financial Review, they're talking about the hangover. The hangover for many people is going to continue. You know, real household disposable income is not looking flash. Interest rates could rise again, they said in this article. Inflation remains stubbornly high. And, you know, the data that came out today is not convincing enough in my mind to say that rates are going to get cut. And some of the other information that's floating around suggests the RBA may have to lift again. We'll see. But certainly rates are higher for longer. And that's going to put more pressure on households, particularly because there are some still people who have fixed rate mortgages, which are going to switch to variable, and just the cumulative effect of paying higher interest rates for a lot longer. And as you said earlier on, the savings buffer is now being drained away. So the longer this goes on, the more people are going to get a bit exposed.
Absolutely. All right. So next up, Mark, do you want to maybe outline a little bit more detail federal government scheme here?
Yeah, so the idea was that they were going to provide, if you like, more support to try and encourage more people to get into the marketplace with a lower deposits and those sorts of things. So, it's, you know, first-time buyer incentives and the like. You know, I get frustrated here because everyone's trying to sort of incentivize demand, right? And, you know, and this is yet another story, and both federal and state governments do it. They do it specifically around election time to try and actually encourage more people to vote for them. But unfortunately this time, or fortunately this time, we look at it, the Greens are saying, hang on a moment, we're not sure we want this. And unless you actually tackle some of the issues around the rental sector, we're not playing ball. So this will be a really interesting story over this year as to whether, in fact, the Greens are able to flex their muscles and perhaps attract greater support from the rental sector as they try and, you know, crimp some of the rent rises, which, again, the latest data shows were rising very strongly. And in some of the research, it's they're talking double-digit increases in average rent. So it's still dramatically high. But the government, of course, will think about trying to encourage people to say everything's fine. And if you look at some of the mainstream media, they're saying, oh, great time to buy, et cetera, et cetera. It's amazing, you know, despite the fact that affordability is shot. But if you go to the next slide, I was quite amazed and amused at this. This is the subsidized demand story, right? Here you go. House prices go up, people get angry. Solution, subsidized demand. So house prices go up, people get angry. So you subsidize demand again. For me, this is a lovely meme, which really just shows the stupidity of the whole thing.
Martin, I love that you're into memes, as long as you stay away from those meme coins in crypto land. But, yeah, the mind boggles, doesn't it? You zoom out and you think Australia has the lowest, people per square kilometre or mile, however you want to measure it, of all these countries. We've got all this land, and yet for some reason we have some of the most expensive housing in the world. There has to be a way to solve this. But, again, it's one of those things where I just think is anything really going to change structurally because of who's making the money and the banks and whatnot?
Well, house prices are set by policy, right? Directly or indirectly. So in other words, this isn't just a happenstance. This is an accident. This is a deliberate strategy over a number of decades, right? Including high migration, including deleveraging and allowing people to just, effectively get ever bigger mortgages relative to the incomes. So this is a strategy that has been in play for quite a long time. And until we wake up and understand that this is deliberate, and therefore, if it's deliberate, it can be changed, just saying, oh, it's the market or something, right, is not going to actually fly. But those in power, those politicians, of course, who also always want to think about the next election, don't want to do the things they should do to try and solve it. It is solvable, but only if you start from a different point in the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to the next slide, but I am hoping that Martin's memes becomes a regular slide in our presentations, Martin.
Well, only if I see a really good one, because there are lots of rubbishy ones. We'll see.
deal.
Yeah.
So income measures are down in the negatives.
Yeah, just to say this is in real terms. So inflation-adjusted incomes, right, down lowest in history. And I just want to underscore that. So in real terms, most households are continuing to go backwards. So they're having to spend more, earn less in real terms. And there's no prospect of that changing. And that's something which is really, really important to understand. This is why a lot of people are saying, gee, it's really tough at the moment, right? It's not surprising. And then if you look at the next slide, why? Why is it that disposable income is so bad? Well, of course, we've got the interest rate payments because the RBA's put the rates up. But look at this, the income tax take, has gone through the roof. And that's because of, again, government policy. So what they've done is they've frozen some of the tax breaks, et cetera, et cetera. So what it means is that we're actually spending a greater proportion of our income supporting the government rather than actually doing other things. And that's one of the main reasons why, in real terms, disposable income has just gone through the floor.
Yeah, along with bracket creep and a few other things we spoke about in more detail in previous episodes.
But, absolutely.
Like we touched on before with the US, it's those interest payments that are pinching people. And I just want to, again, maybe go off topic a little bit. I know you've covered this and we've spoken about it. And hopefully both our audience are aware of all this stuff that's going with the World Economic Forum and this plan 2030, you own nothing and have no privacy and be happy. And this is kind of what you can easily do once you have people in a lot of debt and they don't really own anything. So think about the world can change a lot in 3 years if the last 3 years hasn't proven anything. But going down this path of wanting you to rent all your white goods and your furniture and, everything basically debt and then raising up interest rates and just really giving themselves more and more power. The other thing to mention here that sort of ties in with this as well is I don't know if you saw this article, Martin, Chinese borrowers defaulting, now 8 million people are blacklisted. When you get blacklisted in China, you can't use Alipay and WeChat Pay, you can't buy airplane tickets, all these kind of things. It's kind of basically everything that they do over there is through Alipay, WeChat Pay and all that type of thing. So 8 million people now, you don't really hear about this type of thing. But be warned, it's coming once they roll out these central bank digital currencies. If you say something that they don't like, or you get behind your payments, they, you know, you don't own anything, you don't really have those freedoms.
Yeah, and the removal of cash, of course, is one of the critical things that I'm campaigning against, as well as maintaining the branch network rather than just going all digital. Because the other factor you've got to bear in mind is, as well as the government control that you have when it's all digital, when the power goes off, then nothing works. And particularly in Australia, with some of the recent floods and things, again, what we've seen is what happens when the power goes off. Nobody can do anything. So we need to make sure that we safeguard democracy and safeguard the ability to be able to continue to transact by allowing cash to be part of the story and not allowing it to be sucked into a future which is completely digital, with a central bank digital currency which can be turned off and turned on, credit scored and all of those things. And, you know, there is a sort of a puzzle that you can put together, and, you know, nobody wants necessarily to always admit that's where people are thinking, but those technocrats, those top-down people who believe they know what's best for everybody, are leading us into a blind alley. So we need to be aware of what's going on and also resist it where we can.
Yes, and all of those people are too afraid to walk down the street these days, which just shows you how big the and far away the people in power have got from the average person.
Yeah, well, the World Economic Forum, of course, is not even an elected entity.
Yes. All right. Thanks for letting me have a bit of a rant there, Martin. talking about the case for stage three.
Yeah, well, coming. Just to say, of course, this stupid policy that was, thrown into the previous election, the incumbent government is still basically saying, well, we're going to do it. But, you know, the case for it is getting weaker and weaker. And, maybe if we were starting again, we wouldn't actually even go there. Remember what I said about the tax take. And the tax take changes, if this came in, would actually benefit, again, the more affluent people rather than the bulk of people who actually perhaps need the help more directly. So I think the question in 2024 will be whether they will change the stage three tax cuts in some way, or whether they will just blindly go into implementing it. We'll know in a few months. But for me, this is a big deal.
Interesting as well, spiking container rates, and we've seen a few turbulent shipping straits lately. Was it the Somali pirates and the Indian Navy were called out to another one? So I'm not sure if that's another factor that confounds these shipping container rates.
Correct. So it's the Red Sea, basically. So, you know, a lot of stuff went through the Suez Canal. They now can't because of what's going on there, so they're going around. But remember what happened, post-COVID or through COVID? What was the trigger for a lot of the inflation? It was actually to do with the container rates. That was a leading indicator. So the question, I leave it as an open question, is it likely, possible, that we're going to see another wave of goods inflation simply because of the spike in container rates? Because they're now much higher than they were. Watch this space. I don't think the inflation battle is over. And I do believe that seeing some of these container rates spiking suggests to me that the inflation dragon has not been slayed.
I think there's another bit of a side story there about the US wanting to take more power over some of these shipping channels as well, but we might leave that rabbit hole for another day.
Well, they did announce overnight that they've been shooting down some of those missiles that were being shot at the container ships. I mean, unfortunately, global conflict and regional conflict are getting all messed up, and of course, proxy wars are left, right, and centre. You know, there is a really, really critical question here about, well, who's actually calling the shots and who's actually, fighting the fights and et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes I think the moral standards that we would expect to see within conflicts are being compromised as well. So I'm afraid that this is another, worrying sign for the year, I think.
All right, moving on. So average change in capital city home prices.
Well, just to say, of course, that prices as growth is now, still there, but it's much weaker than it was. And it's just wanted to show from this AMP chart how volatile it's been over quite some time, from 2007 to 2023. So the idea that prices always go up is just not true. And we are now in probably a bit of a down cycle with high interest rates, with real wages going backwards. So it'll be very interesting to see where things go. But if you look at the next slide, this was actually published in the AFR, and it showed you how different people have views as to where prices might be through 2024. And it's interesting that Shane Oliver, AMP, is saying somewhere between -5 and -3. Maybe Christopher's down that end of the spectrum, whereas some of those writing for the real estate portals are much more positive. Well, I wonder what that might be. So it's an interesting story. And, you know, nobody knows, but just worth thinking about that maybe we've got the down part of the cycle now coming with regard to high house prices.
Yeah. Okay, so slide 20, we've got household debt to income ratio, so not a good record to hold.
We hold a great record. You know, we have the highest disposable income to household debt ratio pretty much in the world. No surprise, as I said, it's policy. It's been around for a long, long time. But, you know, a lot of people are now really, well, frankly, reaping the whirlwind. They now are understanding that when debts are high and when interest rates are high, it's a huge burden. And in fact, the, you know, the multiples now people are paying in terms of their monthly disposable, in my models, I'm seeing at 40 to 50% plus of disposable income, just servicing a mortgage or just servicing a rent. This is not good for ordinary Australians, and it's not a good record to hold.
Yeah, just going back to quickly what we spoke about before, it's Australia, Canada, UK and the US, even New Zealand to some degree, these places where the powers that be are trying to take away our freedoms the fastest. And if you look at that, you know, Australia and Canada got the most debt. That's why it's easiest to get us to coerce and force us to do things or take power away from us. So it's a dangerous situation to be in for multiple reasons.
Yeah, and one of the other factors, of course, is that we have variable interest rates. So a high proportion of our debt is variable, which means that the impact of higher interest rates bite much more severely here in Australia relative to many other parts of the world.
Yeah. All right. So if you can't afford a home, invest in a rental.
So this was a headline in the AFR again. What I thought was interesting was, and I'm seeing in some of my surveys, people are now giving up trying to find somewhere to live themselves. So what they're doing is trying to buy a small property somewhere else. At least they say get a foot on the property ladder. Unfortunately, quite a few of them are buying units, and unit prices are not behaving themselves at the moment very well at all. And there's a limit on the amount of income that can be generated from the rent. So a lot of people are almost being bounced into bad property purchase decisions. And it's interesting that CoreLogic director Tim Lawless quoted here saying affordability was unlikely to improve until either interest rates are cut or home values drop. And I want to just let that sink into people. So basically, we are now in the situation where for many people, housing affordability is shot unless we either get rates cut and or house prices fall. We are in a very, very uncertain market at the moment. So don't jump in is my thought to those people who are saying, I give up, I'm going to buy an investment property. Investment properties are not performing well. About 60% of investment properties are underwater from a cash flow perspective at the moment, according to my modelling. And so that's a big deal.
I'd probably add until immigration slows as well. I must think the final figure for last year was around 680,000, something like that. If we get anywhere near that again, I really don't think property is going to give much back with that many people moving here.
No, that's right. But of course, they are talking about turning down the wick on students, but they're allowing people with money to still come into the country, and they are, of course, tending to buy property rather than rent property. So what you're seeing is a high proportion of people in the rental sector are new migrants, and then they get into difficulty from a cash flow perspective because they're having to pay a lot. But there are still quite a few people coming in and buying property and paying top dollar for property. I mean, until the migration dial is dialed back, we're going to see, you know, more disruption in terms of both house prices and more broadly in the economy. And it's worth reflecting, of course, that job openings are still quite strong, particularly in the health sector. That came out today with some data. So a lot of people are coming in and getting multiple jobs. And the final point to make is, if you look at housing affordability, the basic assumption now is that at least two incomes are going in to pay that mortgage rather than one. So what it means is that there are some people who can afford to get in and everything's fine, but there are a lot of people getting up into huge debt and then finding it's impossible. And the last slide just highlights the fact, I made a show a couple of days ago called Household Financial Distress Spreads Further. I used AI to generate that graphic, by the way, just to show you I can. But the point there is that we're seeing more and more people, whether they're in the rental sector or whether they've actually got mortgages, with a cash flow deficit. And this cash flow deficit is spreading out, so more suburbs and more people in more suburbs are up against it. So anybody who thinks that 2024 is going to be those, perfect, highland uplands where rates are cut and everybody suddenly gets real growth in their incomes, probably kidding themselves. I think 2024 is going to be probably as tough as 2023 for many people. So it's important to take ownership of those things personally and not just assume the government's going to sort of magically wave their wand and everything will be fine.
Well, guys, as always, Martin's content is all linked down below, but I'm just impressed that you're using AI and into the memes, Martin. So that's a New Year's resolution, maybe.
Well, you know, it's there, so let's use it.
I love it. And, guys, as always, if you want any more of our crypto research, you can head over to nuggetsnews.com.au. Otherwise, Martin, I really appreciate your time and your slides, as always, and we'll speak to you guys again next month.
See you, guys.
Cheers.